Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ask Margot Today. By way of introducing myself, I thought that I might talk a little bit about the books I've written on the subject of love and romance, or as I sometimes call it, the mating game. In my book, Take My Word for It, It's Love 101, I have some tips and suggestions for how we can make life more romantic, and I thought I'd read you a couple. Number 5 in my book is the suggestion box. I saw this concept demonstrated in a movie recently. The husband came home to his wife and she was wearing an apron and had a plate of cookies that she had just made for him. He was delighted and asked if she had found the suggestion box. Okay, I admit that she was only wearing an apron, but I thought, what a good idea for each person to put their suggestions into a box and the other person could pull one out and decide if they would like to go with the other one's suggestion. It could be an idea sometimes that people find it hard to articulate when we want something from another person but can't find the words for it. And writing it down can take the help take the edge off that. Number 7 in my book is Sweet Nothings. Silence is golden only sometimes. Sweet nothings are the private things that no one else hears, so they're not like terms of endearment that might be heard publicly. Words are triggers for women, gentlemen. I'm going to say that again. Words are triggers for women. They make the wheels turn. They turn the lights on. They ignite the engine. You get my meaning. Words can create magic. They can create, nurture, and generate romance, affection, love, interest, you name it. Number 8 in my book is gifts. Of course, this is not about stuff. It's about the act of giving. I've heard boys bemoan because they weren't in a financial position to give as they would like. Well, that just requires a bit more imagination, which women admire. I say, whittle something if that's the extent of what you can drum up. Take time. That's a gift in itself. Go for a walk on the beach, or a cup of coffee, or a drink somewhere romantic. Offer to do something practical. Personally, I find a man vacuuming to be hugely irresistible. You could give a massage yourself, or find the perfect vintage book, a romance or poetry. Pick wild flowers on your way home. Make dinner. Cover at home so that your other person can have a real break. Organise a babysitter. It's not that hard, it just requires a little effort. So think about gift giving, no matter how modest the gift. Use your sweet nothings and maybe instigate a fun suggestion box to bring a little more romance into your life. Now to our questions for the day. The first one is from Angie. I talked to her recently and she has a friend who's been given a "you will not walk again" prognosis from his doctor. He can't accept it, and Angie wants to know if she should encourage him also not to accept it, as though it's written in stone. Hi, Angie. I have read a number of books where people have not accepted what seemed inevitable and have determinedly fixed themselves on the outcome they want. I'm currently reading a book called The Brain That Changes Itself, and it's absolutely fascinating to see how powerful our mind is and how malleable our brain is. There are more connections in our brain than stars in the galaxy. We have a gigantic network of information at our disposal, and we only use a tiny amount of it. The brain can reorganize itself by forming new neural connections throughout all of our life. This doesn't stop when you get older. This plasticity allows our brain to adapt, to learn, and to recover from injuries. The so-called impossible can never be proven possible unless we can allow for it to be possible, unless we consider it might be possible. I do know people who won't attempt many things in life because they don't want to be disappointed. But what's worse, aiming for something big and not necessarily attaining it, or realizing that you didn't even try. They say that at the end of our lives, we look back and it's not the things we did do that we regret, but the things we didn't do. There's a lot of really great reading to be done on the subject of what's possible and what people have achieved, with scientific data to back up much of it. We are still learning. When something happens that's unexpected, that people haven't believed was possible, they call it an anomaly. Let me look that up for you. It's something different, abnormal, peculiar, or not easily classified, something anomalous. That's an interesting word. It's a deviation from the common rule, an irregularity. But let's give that a different definition. An anomaly is something that happened that you didn't know would happen. If it has happened once, it's there to show us that it can happen. I don't believe in anomalies. I don't even know why we've got such a word. To me, an anomaly is something people have observed that they're not prepared to investigate. It's like a door is opening for us. Oh, this has happened. It's possible. What does it mean? How did it happen? Let's find out and make sure it keeps happening. Sometimes it's called spontaneous remission. Sometimes it's called a miracle. Sometimes we just call it an anomaly and we dismiss it. Let's not do that. We must go back to the drawing board and ask ourselves why and how, and then how will we make it happen again? Angie, my advice is that you back your friend 100%. Every time you speak to that man, tell him what he needs to hear to encourage him to keep believing for more for himself. The state of mind that will put him in is so much better and more conducive to health and healing than not believing it's possible. Believing for less is easier, but it could be cowardly or weak. In my opinion, we have to stop being dumb about these things and let's engage our amazing untapped minds and its untapped capacity. Let's stop believing for less and start expecting more. Let me know how you go, Angie, because I really would love to hear. Remember, if it's been done once by somebody somewhere, that means it can be done. I like to take this even a step further. Whether someone else has done it or not, there's got to be a first time and a first person. So forget about whether it's been done before. Ask yourself, is it possible? Could it be done? And then say, might I be the one to do it first? And then you'll be so charged up, you'll be able to launch yourself forward and do anything you set your heart on. Full support from me. Now, our second question today is about the influence parents have on their children. I spoke to Sam the other day who felt that his children were so independent and such individuals that he wondered whether they as parents had any influence on how their children turned out at all. I do believe we hugely influence our children, Sam, and here are some facts to show to what a great extent that really is the case. This is all scientific research, so you'll have a break from my very opinionated opinion. I haven't listed all the references to the research and scientific journals that these facts are from, but if you want them, I can send them to you. This one is from the University of Notre Dame. It found that children who receive higher levels of warmth and affection from their parents have better psychological well-being, including lower levels of anxiety and depression, and increased emotional regulation and social competence. Those are really important. An active parent engagement, such as helping with homework and attending school events, boosts children's motivation and achievement. Children imitate the behaviors and attitudes of their parents. positive role modelling by parents can instill values such as empathy, responsibility, and perseverance in children, and we all need that in life. Children with highly involved fathers exhibit better cognitive development, social skills, and overall emotional well-being. Open and effective communication between parents and children enhances children's social competence. It makes children better at forming and maintaining healthy relationships. And we all want that for our children. Consistent and fair parental discipline practices are associated with better self-regulation in children. Clear and consistent rules help children understand boundaries and develop self-control. I think teaching a child self-control and self-management is one of the most important things we can give to our children. Children of parents with good mental health are less likely to experience psychological issues such as anxiety and depression, and we know that's rampant in the world today. Parental help and support helps your children develop a secure attachment style, which is crucial for emotional stability. So those are just some facts. I mean, some of them we know, but to hear them restated and scientifically researched is always encouraging. So this research underscores the profound impact that parental relationships and behaviours have on our children's development. Warmth, involvement, high expectations, effective communication, positive role modelling by parents contributes to better psychological well-being, academic achievement, social competence and emotional regulation in our children. That's something to be aimed for. Here are two of my favourite points. One is, a daughter's self-esteem is often shaped by the relationship she has with her father. What a great thing to give your daughter to go into life with. And sons often learn how to express and manage emotions through their relationships with their mothers. It's an important job we have as a parent. Of course, the quality of a parent's marriage serves as a model for the children's future romantic relationships. Children who observe respectful, loving relationships between their parents, whether the parents are still together or not, those children will seek out and maintain healthy relationships for themselves. It isn't that good people don't result from crummy families, but it's such hard work for children who have to undo the bad stuff before they can think about establishing good things in themselves. As parents, we need to do our bit to foster the best learning and emulating environment for our children. I see it as a kind of mission from God, and we need to do it whether we can see the results of it or not, because sometimes children just go a bit mad, and it's not till later in life that they suddenly come to their senses and think, oh yes, I remember all those good things and I want to be that person that my parents saw me as. So good luck with that. It's an ongoing job. Our third question today. I've been talking with a number of people recently, interestingly, regarding online dating. And a question that came up was how to get people to accept someone's profile without dismissing it when they've been selected through an in-depth process to be a potential match. This is actually a two-part question. And the second part of the question is, how do you get them not to dismiss someone on the first date by saying there was no chemistry there? I do have some distinct thoughts on these two questions. The first one, accepting someone's profile, is that there are some things that need to be considered. The first one is that we need to look at ourselves and our wish list for a mate and say, am I what I'm looking for? Do I have the qualities I'm seeking in another person? Don't skim over this because it must be addressed. If you're looking for someone special with fine qualities, you must be able to look in the mirror and say to yourself, am I what I'm looking for? you must tick the boxes. And I'm not talking about the tall, blue eyes, blonde hair kind of boxes, because that is superficial, everybody. I'm talking about integrity, reliability, openness, those kinds of boxes. So if you think you've been matched with somebody, leave the judgment at the door and be open to an adventure when you go on a first date. And if you're on a date now where you have to trot out your best, shiny, most appealing self, you know how it is. You have to be witty, interesting, interested, charming, attractive in every sense. And that's a lot for any one person to deliver on a first meeting. No pressure. What if you keep your expectations for all of these attributes quite moderate, allowing for each other to get over that first barrier of meeting somebody for the first time? I suggest a series of questions that you are equipped with when you go to a first date that are well thought out and designed to engage the other person easily and put them and you at your ease. Questions like this: what's the best trip you've ever been on and what made it so special? If you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would they be and why? What's your favourite way to spend a weekend when you have no plans or obligations? Is there a book or movie that you think everyone should read or see at least once in their life? If you could instantly become an expert in any field or skill, what would it be? And what's the most interesting or unusual thing on your bucket list? These questions are directed to reveal personal interests, values, and experiences without delving into overtly personal or sensitive territory. So perfect for a first date, really, because they start a conversation. So the second part of this question was how to get people not to dismiss a first date because they didn't feel any chemistry. I have always held the theory that it doesn't matter how you get there in terms of love, it only matters about the quality of what you have when you are there. It doesn't matter if you meet in a bar or on a beach, it doesn't matter if it took a long time or a little time. It doesn't matter if it took a bit of sorting to get into a rhythm with another person or whether it was just like magic in the movies. It only matters that it turns out to be a quality connection. We really need to leave our judgy self at home and bring our open-minded, charitable, benefit-of-the-doubt self to a date. I have a theory that sometimes touch will be enough to ignite a spark between people. It would be fine to touch someone on the hand or arm on a first date. You might like to dance closely. That's socially acceptable in a very revealing way about whether you want to be in close contact with someone. You might like to kiss someone. If you're a bit of an adventurer, you may decide, unless you find the person completely unappealing, that you will kiss every date you go out with. It doesn't have to be full on. It can be a delicate, feathery testing of the waters. Who knows? Oxytocin may kick in big time. Dating is supposed to be fun. Decide you will have fun and just enjoy yourself and the other person's company. It's another human being to get to know. It's not a commitment. It's just a date. Trot out your playful, flirty self. We all have one. And allow the other person to respond to you, whether you're a man or a woman. This is a game after all. Treat it like that. Cut the other person some slack and give them the benefit of the doubt. You never know. You may be surprised by discovering they have enormous appeal that wasn't apparent in the beginning. I have a friend who knew a man who knew many women who seemed to be interested in him, and my friend couldn't understand it. She didn't get the attraction. She couldn't figure out what made him so appealing until he turned his attention onto her. Then she came to see what the others had seen. She just didn't see it in the beginning. We really have to give people an opportunity. If you've been prepared to put yourself in the hands of a matchmaker, you must have a little faith that they have taken care of the important sifting and sorting process for you, so you haven't had to do it. Now you've got to have a little faith. You need to have some faith in them. You need to have some faith in the universe to deliver somebody great for you. And lastly, you need to have some faith in yourself to be able to make a quality judgment at the end of the day. You never know. Your next date could prove to be the man or woman of your dreams. So don't give up. And I hear people who say, I've had enough, I'm not doing anymore. Don't give up, because the next person you meet could be the one. Well, our last question today is number 4, and it is, what happens when we die? I was talking to my brother the other day and explaining about the kinds of questions that were asked on Ask Margot. And I said to him, do you have a question? And he said, yes. What happens when we die? I said, ooh, that's a big one. And he said, yes, and you will answer it, because we both tell each other quite a lot what we ought to do. And he said, begin with the story of the plastic bag. Okay, so I'm going to do that. Even though I think I might have told you this story before, it's a really good one to remember. When you look up at the sky and you ask, who am I? What am I doing here? And what does it all mean? That's where the story kicks in. Often we don't ask such questions because we really aren't at all sure that the answer is available to us. I used to think like that. I used to think I won't ask why because nobody knows. Now I ask why all the time, because I believe we can know and that there are answers. I confess that I don't really do karma, because I think we've got quite enough to sort out in our own lifespan without having to worry about what our great-great-great-grandma might have gotten up to, or other potential lives that may have been lived. That suits me fine. I haven't felt the need to go there. Although I have to say, sometimes in my hypnotherapy sessions, people have regressed to another life. Sometimes people will say, I'm Cleopatra, or I'm Marie Antoinette. You just go with it. It doesn't matter who they see themselves as. It only matters how they feel in that moment. What did that make them believe about themselves? So I just deal with this lifetime, this dimension, and that keeps me fully occupied. My favourite way of looking at life, which I find enjoyable and not the least bit scary, because sometimes subjects like death and the big picture stuff can be scary. It's that we are all having a lovely time in our eternal state of beingness, and God says to us, who would like to go to Earth to have some playtime? And we all put up our hands and we say, pick me, rather excitedly. So he does pick us. And when we get ready to go and become born into a family on Earth, he says to us, there's just one catch. You won't remember who you really are. You won't remember that you are eternal, timeless, immortal, unlimited beings. You will think you are just an earthling. You won't remember who you really are, and you'll have to discover it. Many of you won't bother, but some of you will know that you are more, and you will search for the key to who you really are. Some of you will search for it and not find it, because you'll be looking in the wrong places. Others of you will know that it's hidden in a place you would least expect. It's hidden within you. So God says to us, off you go, have a lovely time, see you later. Don't take it too seriously, because it's not going to last that long. Report back to me when you come home. I look forward to hearing of your adventures. And don't forget, you can always, always plug into your source, aka me, if you need it, anytime, any place. And just like that, there is a close encounter on Earth and a baby is on its way. So that's my take on how we come to be here and the meaning of life. But back to the story about the plastic bag. I did get carried away about birth and life rather than death. I have seen death, and I have deeply mourned the loss of those I've loved who are no longer here. So I don't want to detract from the seriousness and the importance of that. I've thought about how I'd feel in that moment, because I quite like life and I'm in no way ready to depart yet. My focus at the moment that I'm finding quite profound is my unity with my source, with, if you like, all that is, with God. And that feeling of unity gives me the most profound peace, a feeling that not just that all is well, but that everything is under perfect management. I'd like to think that when it's my time to leave, that will be my most profound and predominant thought and all-consuming feeling. I'd be fine with that. Now, the story. This is about who you are. I'd like you to picture that you hold in your hands a clear plastic bag. Into that bag, you're going to put everything. You're going to put your loves, your dislikes, your temperament, your personality, your dog, your cat, your job, your friends and family, your disappointments. Put your anger in there, if you have some. Put your joys, imagination, your past, your present, and your future in there. You're going to put your body in there, all the bits of it, whether you like it or whether you're not happy with it. Put your mind and emotions, your history and your hopes in there. Everything. Now seal up that bag and pull that little Ziploc thing across. Where are you, my friend? You are the one who is holding the bag. All the things that you thought were you are in the bag. You are beyond the bag. Your essence is timeless, formless, eternal, and my favourite word, immortal. So you are, in fact, beyond death. Well, that's my take on death today. Perhaps death is a bit like time, and we need to perceive it in a new way outside of the tangible, linear dimensions we've believed. Some food for thought. So please send your questions to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margounlimited.com, Margo with a T. Thank you for your company today. I've enjoyed this immensely. I hope there are some thoughts of interest there for you. I wish you a great week as we finish with the word, our message from the universe for today. I see you as you really are. I see you as magnificent creators and moulders of reality. You are potters with clay. You are painters with blank canvases. Actually, you can even paint over whatever you have painted before. You are gardeners with a basket of every imaginable seed. You need only move that clay, wield that brush, choose your seed, and place it in the ground. Thank you so much. See you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.